Blog Talk Radio.
You have made it to Stu and the Nun, an online radio show that looks to inform, educate, and hopefully make you laugh. Stu and the Nun is a show focused on national security, policy, politics, and selfless service. We do this by not only interviewing guests, but also sharing our perspectives and asking you, the listener, to interact with us on our show chat room, via our Facebook page, and on Twitter.
Good evening, everybody. How is their Tuesday night going? I hope it is going swell here in the Central Texas area. It's not just swell, it's sweltering. Enjoying another delightful night of half our house's AC. If your AC needs to go out, there's no better time for it to go out than the night you leave town. You and I were out last week, Troy, at the Range 15 premiere with a little guy by the name of Tim Kennedy. And as we were at that, my wife was frantically texting me going, the AC went out. And so we're enjoying the sweltering heat while we're waiting on our new upgraded, super-duper governmental-approved new system gets going down. So we'll enjoy the sweltering heat for another day or so. But everything else is going great. I just returned from Laconia Fest in New Hampshire, and holy crap, have I got some stories to tell you about that place. But other than that, how are you, my baldness?
I'm doing good, doing good. As you can see, I'm sporting my brand new BO, Veterans Outdoors hat, one of our proud sponsors here at Stu and the Nun Radio, sipping on a little Crown Royal single barrel.
Mm.
And feeling a whole bunch of America behind me, if you can see that. All kind of America going on. So, I'm doing well, my bald brother. And, yeah, it was good to see you last week. I feel bad for you. You are without AC right now because it's warm up here in the upper northern studio, but it is nothing like the heat down there. Awesome. So, I imagine you probably dropped about 7 or 8 pounds just in the last day.
Well, so we have a 2-unit house, so actually it's just the kids that are doing without. Couldn't have happened to better kids.
Well, you know, age has its privileges, and so does it when you're paying the bills.
Yeah, so like it's like a bombshell, you know, in our downstairs while all our kids live upstairs. For the time being, they're living downstairs till we get this new unit put in for them up there. But no, it's actually not that bad. It's more entertaining than anything else. So.
Well, good, good. Well, it's like I say, hopefully you're not suffering too much. If it's just the kids, well, you know, it toughens them up and makes them better people when they grow up. So tell them the classic phrase, it's hurting you more than it's hurting me or
I mean, if you don't face adversity, how are you ever going to achieve anything?
Really? How do you know what good is? You know, our good friend Kelly Krieger wrote in his book Curmudgeon, how, you know, being in your 20s is not really the best because, you know, you don't know how good you have it in your 20s. You know, how do you, in a statement that I've memorized this is, how do you know you're in heaven if you've never been to hell?
Absolutely. That, in fact, that's a great book. I encourage all our listeners, men over the age of 30, to go out and get it. It's Curmudgeonism by Kelly Krieger. It's published by a little company called Graybeard Books. You can find it on www.booksbyveterans.com. And Also, you can find it on Amazon. It's a great book. I believe he's still signing copies when you buy it, and give you a great deal on it. And he's got some great insight. Former Lieutenant Colonel, United States Army, as well as past special guest co-host and guest of the show. So feel free to go out and get that book. Support your local veteran publishing company, Greybeard Books, and check out their newest arrival, The Iron Mike Survival Guide, which you heard from its author, Dave Dunphy, on last week's episode. So two great books by a great veteran publishing company. Go out and get you some.
All kind of good stuff there. And speaking of authors and writing books, we have an author tonight, which I am happy to talk about. We're really excited to have on tonight's show, episode 44, Miss Amber Smith. Amber is a former OH-58 Iowa helicopter pilot, combat tours in Afghanistan and Iraq, and she has done some phenomenal stuff in service of our country. She's even been Air Mission Commander. She served in the 101st, and she has a book coming out in September called Danger Close, My Epic Journey as a Combat Helicopter Pilot in Iraq and Afghanistan. So we're pretty excited to have Amber on tonight, and not only to talk about the book, but also to talk about what she's doing now, as she's currently serving as the press secretary for the Trump Caucus Operations Team for the GOP convention in Cleveland.
What?
So not only has she served in combat, flying helicopters, dropping tangos left and right, but she is continuing to serve in the political process. Serving as press secretary for the GOP convention for the Trump caucus team, which I think is awesome because continuing to give, like so many of our guests, their service doesn't end when they hang the boots over the power line. You know what I'm saying?
Did you do that? Did you toss some boots and leave them there for somebody to get electrocuted to retrieve later?
No, I didn't. Back in my day, when I got out of the active army, that was typically done by the guy yelling FTA on the way out, or the lifetime E4s. I walked out of active army right into an emergency unit, continuing to jump master. So I needed my
these are too valuable. Already
they were high tech, dude, and they were high techs that active army said we couldn't wear, but the National Guard was totally cool with. So there was no way I was getting rid of them bad boys. Just saying. But so we're excited to have Amber on tonight. Before we get there, I want to talk a little bit about what do you got going on? What do you think's happening? A lot of stuff happening, man. Shootings in Orlando, people trying to kill Trump, another hacker releasing stuff on Hillary. What do you got going on?
Man, it is – it's a crazy world, man. It's a crazy world. I can't wait to tell you about the weekend I just had up in Laconia, New Hampshire, as part of the Laconia Fest,
seem pretty excited about it. Let's hit on the high point here.
Dude, the high point would definitely be it's always good to have a contract, and it's always good to have a backup plan. But my weekend could be a chapter in a Hunter S. Thompson book because it involved, rock stars, Hell's Angels, cops, potentially corrupt. it had all the trappings of just straight Hunter S. Thompson shenanigans. But this gun control debate that's, found new wings and then getting slapped down by Supreme Court. Is interesting. This awesome attempt, and I'm calling it awesome because I can't find another word to describe the stupidity and the lack of understanding of a crazy nut job. If you're gonna Let this be a hint towards future story about my weekend. But if you're going to steal something from somebody, there's probably a small demographic you don't want to do it from. Outlaws. law enforcement. Pissed off veteran. Now, if you have a law enforcement officer that happens to be a pissed off veteran, I mean, that's a double whammy.
So what happened there?
Let me borrow this gun from you so I can run up and shoot another man with it. Like, I went to the range. I learned how to shoot a gun, not this one, but something like kind of like it a couple days ago. So I feel like I'm an expert. Let me try and pick this cop's pocket because this guy will not notice that I got a gun. And he's definitely just going to, like, offer it up and be like, knock yourself out there, chacho. And then he, like, tried to fight my way through a crowd. Like, totally didn't think that through. But the best part is he's, like, claimed that he had planned this attack for over a year. And just recently set it into motion in earnest. Like, if this is the mentality and the understanding of the typical person anti-Trump,
this dude's going to win.
Because that mentality was not too sharp, without a doubt. neither was, on another note, not sure the details behind it, but the two gentlemen and the lady today tried to go through the Holland Tunnel in New York City in a jacked-up SUV painted in neon and orange, with an SUV racked full of tactical weapons. I don't call them assault weapons because they don't assault anybody. Tactical weapons, ammo, drugs, and all kind of stuff. And, you know, if you're going to do something like that, go with a black Taurus or a red Camry, not a neon green orange jacked up SUV. I'm waiting to hear the DJ. But that just happened today, going to New York City. Hey, New York City is not one place that don't play around with guns.
So, like, apparently they're calling it like a drug situation gone awry. But, like, let's just circle back and go back to mentality. So before you joined the military as a young man, there was something that inspired you to join the military, be it, you know, a legacy of service in your family, perhaps John Wayne, something American, you know, in terms of film, you know, like in my case, Canadian. There were some great films out there that, you know, talked about, you know, different things. And, you know, I remember watching The Dam Busters, which is a great BBC movie about some of the Brits and, you know, like, so – you know, something inspires you to do that. If you're a drug dealer, I'm assuming that you go back to, like, let's just go back to New Jack City, which was like the, here's how to deal drugs and be super awesome and, like, sell them for cheeseburgers. You know, that's basically like the drug dealer's, like, video Bible, right? You know, you don't do that. Like, didn't they learn any of these? You know, but anyway, it's the mentality thing. But I just really want to touch on tonight before we get going. We got an amazing American coming on here. You already talked her up. Excited to get her on because I have a plethora of questions. One, I want to make sure that we never served in the same area because I have like a couple embarrassing Kiowa Warrior stories. And other than that, this should be a good show. And again, we'll talk about it when she's on the air. Let's bring her on the air.
Yeah, let's bring her on. Everyone, I'd like to introduce to her first episode to Stu and the Nun, Miss Amber Smith. Hello, Amber. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm good. It's great to be with you guys.
Good. Hold on, let's get you in here, my speaker. Welcome. We're so excited. I did talk you up quite a bit, by the way. This is Troy. And the other guy you heard yapping is Toby, my brother from another mother, my ball brother. But we want to welcome you. I mean, you got a lot going on. We got a lot to cover. So before we get into too much of it, I guess if you could give our listeners a little bit of the background of your history, your military history. We're digging more into the book and stuff. But a little bit of background, like any family history in the military, anything like that, what brought you to be a helicopter pilot?
Yeah, no problem. I grew up in an aviation family. Everybody flew, my dad, my mom, my grandfather, my uncle, my cousins. And so I sort of grew up around it, you could say. So my love of flying started at a very early age. But I ended up going the standard college route right out of high school. 9/11 happened, and it sort of relit my interest in the military and aviation and sort of getting involved and going down that path and serving my country. And I started looking into some military aviation programs. And the Army had the Warrant Officer Flight Program, which is it was exactly what I wanted at the time. And I ended up taking all the tests and doing the interviews and getting selected for the program to fly helicopters. And I joined the Army in January of 2003, went to flight school at Fort Rucker, Alabama. And from there, I went to the 101st Airborne Division, where I joined 217 CAV. And I became a Kiowa Warrior helicopter pilot. And then I deployed with my unit to Iraq in 2005 and 6, and then Afghanistan in 2008 and the entire year of 2008, basically.
Okay. One of the last tours that Kiowa had in Afghanistan, wasn't it? Wasn't too far from that.
Actually, they've been the last one was probably 13 or 14, probably closer to 14. So they stuck around for quite a while.
Yeah, yeah, but no more. I'm sure it was sad to see them go.
It was. The Kiowa Warrior had such an essential role in battlefield operations. We, for those of your listeners who aren't familiar with the Kiowa, it's an OH-58 Delta light attack reconnaissance helicopter. It only has two seats, so it only holds the co-pilot and the pilot in command. So like I said, we're a light attack reconnaissance mission, so we fly direct support for ground forces. So in order to be effective at that, we have a 50 cal machine gun, a rocket pod that carries seven. The standard configuration is usually high explosive rockets. We can carry a bunch of different kinds, so if you know what your mission is going to be. And then we also have the capabilities of being configured to fire Hellfire missiles. But our mission can range day to day, depending upon what, you know, is going on in our AO, in our area of operation. We could be conducting reconnaissance in the mountains of Afghanistan looking for the enemy one day or even 1 hour. The next, we're pulling convoy security, looking for IEDs ahead of whatever the convoy we are covering, or we could be responding to a troops in contact where the ground forces are in direct contact with the enemy. So basically like a firefight, and they're calling us in to lay down fire to protect them. Just depends on the day. It's never the same day twice.
Right, right. Yeah, an awesome airframe. Two of my closest friends, my best friend, we're godfathers to each other, kids and everything like that. He was a Kiowa pilot. We moved on to fixed wing. He was one of the lucky few, and before he retired. But he, so I'm pretty close to the Kiowa and the guys that fly and got to know a lot of them and hang out with them. And then of course I've been on the business end of it, or the requesting end, not the business end. So yeah, great helicopter platform, very flexible, and it's pretty awesome. So is that kind of inspired? Was that part of the inspiration for your book, or was it just your tours and the uniqueness of being a female in a combat platform out there dealing death, hopefully, with a lot of bad guys?
Well, it's probably a couple of things. One of the best compliments that I got while I was in country, actually, when I was in Afghanistan, I had a ground guy come up to me, and he asked what my call sign was, and I said, I'm Annihilator 2-4, and he said, oh, you were supporting my unit on whatever mission. And he was like, we absolutely love you guys because you're like an airborne extension of the infantry. And so for the Kiowa Warrior pilots that go out, you know, every day, and we're working with these people, and we have this bond with the ground guy. Yeah, we're not on the ground with them, but we're, you know, at times 50 to 100 to 150 feet above them. And so we have this sense of responsibility to protect them. And so it was great to hear that from a ground guy that we're protecting. And so but one of my driving factors behind my book is that there hasn't been a book written about what it's like to go to war as a Kiowa Warrior pilot. You hear about what it's like to, you know, there's been books written about Navy SEALs and infantry, platoon leaders, and all of these great and amazing stories. But I just felt like there was, you know, a Kiowa Warrior story needed to be told as well because of the role that we played in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we were essential to battlefield success.
Yeah, absolutely. The and I got to tell you, and I'm saying this on behalf of many a grunts out there, and please don't take this wrong, but you know, I was many times on the ground talking to an A-10 or maybe even other platforms, and including helicopter pilots. And there's something about being an infantry grunt out there, and you're fighting an enemy like the Taliban who treat women no respect or anything. When you hear a female voice on the other end, and you know it's dealing some death. Not only is it inspirational for us as the grunts on the ground, but it's just something really kick-ass about knowing women are, like, dealing some hell down on top of them. That was always like the – you might as well have just wrapped those bullets in bacon. That's about the only thing you could have done to make it a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely saw it's really unfortunate what, you know, we saw as Kiowa pilots over there in terms of the way women were treated in both countries. So it was definitely an eye opener, that's for sure.
Amber, Toby here. Quite a change, like from, so where did you go to school and then like the military path to where you're at right now? Like that's a little bit of a dynamic shift from, you know, pulling on a collective thing to standing there, you know, and working in the political realm.
Yeah, so I straight out of high school, I went to University of Washington. I went there for a couple of years, got 9/11 happened. I had my love for aviation sort of reignited and love of country and feeling that I needed to step up to the plate and give back and serve my country. I ended up finishing college at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University while I was in the military. Such a great program that the military has in terms of continuing your education. And then when I got out of the Army, I ended up going to grad school. I went to Eastern Kentucky University. That was sort of my transition from active duty military into the civilian world before I started writing Danger Close, which is my book. And then I went and I worked for an organization called Concerned Veterans for America. It's a grassroots veterans advocacy organization that's doing tremendous work on reforming the Department of Veterans Affairs that we all know in the past couple of years. Scandals have broken across the country in terms of the way veterans are treated. And so the organization was really doing work on the veterans' behalf in terms of making sure that they get the best care that they not only deserve, but that they've earned because of their service. So I went from there to the position that I'm in now as the press secretary for the 2016 GOP convention in caucus operations.
So the Concerned Veterans for America, the tour, did you like go out on most of that and like hang out with like Madison Rising and those guys? In fact, that I want to say I like checked out like the Austin and Houston shows.
Yeah, that was I did the 2013 tour that they did, and then they've had one every year. I do believe that it's still going on actually for a few more months now. I think they still have a couple tour stops going on, but it really they were great events, tremendous speakers, military veterans, military heroes, really. If you got to listen to some of the speakers, we had a Gold Star Mom, just people who have done really great things for this country, made lots of sacrifices, and then continue to tell their story and inspire others. And I'm very proud to have been a part of the organization because I really believe that they're making a difference in the lives of veterans right now.
So as a lot of our listeners know, you know, I have an affinity for books. Troy and I are both writers. I had the pleasure and opportunity of getting published. So did my main man on here. So how did that – I mean, because you're basically signed by Simon & Schuster, even though you're on, like, Altria, which is one of their, like, sub-brands. Like, that's a big signing. Did you go through an agent? How was that process for you? How have you enjoyed that process? Did someone do the actual writing for you, or you dictated it, or did you manage the process yourself? Like, walk us through that.
So I did. So my publisher is Atria. They're an imprint of Simon Schuster. And I feel like I had the idea of my book for a while. It wasn't very narrowly focused in terms of the outline and, like, basically the bones of the book. That took a while for basically it to come together, for me to exactly figure out how I was going to tell my story. There's a lot of work that goes into basically the outline and figuring out how it's all going to flow into a book, you know, especially a nonfiction book. So I did go through an agent. Once you have an agent, you do a proposal. And this is all before you're signed or anything like that. The proposal is just to give to a publisher. And the proposal was very challenging because, like, it's everything that I just mentioned. You have to figure out the direction you want to go, the stories you want to tell, your story arc. So all of these new things that I had to learn since I had never written a book before. But the big thing that I wanted to do with my story is I wanted to preserve my voice because this is my story. I'm getting this one chance to tell it. And I want it to be, you know, straight from me. I didn't want someone else to write my story. I just felt like there would have been so much lost in it. And so I decided to write it myself. And it was very, very challenging, but it was so incredibly rewarding. I got reconnected with all of my old Army pilots that I flew with in my unit and in combat because, you know, I got to interview them all for my book. And it was like no time had passed at all. So it was great to reconnect with those guys and sort of relive our glory days, so to speak. Everybody was super supportive. It was a great experience. It was so challenging. I don't even know how to describe it, though, because once you're done with the manuscript, you then go into revisions, and revisions are hard because it's your baby. It's what you wrote, and, you know, you have to make all sorts of edits, so it's because you want it to be in the best form it can be in terms of reading. So it's a lot of work, I'm not going to lie.
I mean, it's coming out, I believe, in September, right? And, you know, they got a big marketing campaign for you. They're going to put you out there and get you singing on the late night shows and swinging out there at Fox and Friends in the morning. You excited about what it's like to go through the pressers and kind of, you know, what? I mean, I always felt like very exposed. I know Troy and I talked about this several times, but like when your book gets out there, you know, it gets super exposed and now you're vulnerable and, it's scary, you know, like, are you excited about that?
Yeah, absolutely. We are going to have a big media strategy, a big media push. So people know about the book that it's being released. But I'm excited about it. I am looking forward to people getting to read it, to tell you the truth and to sort of gain that experience from my perspective of me writing my book. But I've been doing, like I said, with my old organization, I essentially acted as a spokesperson. I've been doing media for years now. So it definitely takes something to get used to, but I feel like something that is, basically easier on my, I call the media push the easy part, the writing it and the revisions were the hard part, but the media push is going to be, easier because it's just, I'm used to it, you could say.
Okay. Hey, Amber, this is Troy. We have a question from our chat room. We have people listening in there. And they're wondering if you have a my chat room just refreshed. Great. Boston Maggie, one of our good friends of ours, just asked if you have like a Twitter. Are you on Twitter? Do you have a hashtag for your book? Are you doing anything like that and trying to promote it and get the buzz going on social media?
Yeah, absolutely. That's such a great question. My Twitter handle is at Amber Smith USA, and same as my Instagram. And then my hashtag for my book is hashtag Danger Close. So that'll be on anything associated with my book on social media. And then you can also find me on Facebook. It's facebook.com/officialAmberSmith, I do believe, is my Facebook page.
All right. Good deal. Yeah, I know there's a lot of stuff to follow. And part of the reason why I'm sure it's kind of hard to follow is tell me if you like the segue. You're pretty busy serving as the press secretary on the, if I got this right, the Trump campaign caucus for the GOP convention. Is that the right title to use?
So I'm the press secretary for the 2016 Republican National Convention for the caucus operations. So caucus operations team is basically the liaison between the national convention staff and then the campaign party's presumptive nominee, which is Donald Trump.
Okay. All right. So you're not necessarily working on the Trump campaign, but on behalf of the GOP convention.
Exactly. We're not working for the Trump campaign, but we're representing the Trump campaign in terms of the go-between the convention and the campaign.
Okay. So that's kind of interesting. I mean, I guess is that kind of a – that come about from your book writing? Did it come about from some of your media representations, or did being a veteran have anything to do with that?
I think it was basically all of the above. The caucus operations team has, you know, years of combined experience from not only the political world, but also the military, the veteran community as well. I'm so proud to be a part of this team and all of the experience that they bring with it. We have right now, just on the comms side of the team, we have four veterans. We have three Army veterans and one Marine. And three of us are combat veterans. So, and we actually have an Army Ranger as well, too. I missed one guy. So we've got lots of military representation. And I think that's, it's great. I think it speaks to what veterans have to bring to the campaign in terms of their work ethic and different roles and experiences that they've had in the past. A lot of us, you know, we've all been involved in, three out of the five of us have been involved in conflicts around the globe. So we're used to stressful environments with tight deadlines and lots of responsibilities. And everybody is a great asset to the team.
That's awesome. I mean, it's great you have a, you know, you guys reached out to and brought a Marine on because, you know, it's good to help those guys out. And it makes you all look smarter, too. So, you know, just.
No, he's great. He is great. Everybody on this team is incredibly talented in their specific fields that they're working in right now. And. So
we like to mess them. We don't have one on tonight, but we as you know, we always go back and forth. Let me ask you, what are the meetings like? Is it like being in a bub or a talk or something? Is there like a whole bunch of F bombs and dip spitting and things like that when you guys are just with yourselves? And then when you go out into the civilian populace, everybody cleans up real nice.
it's definitely go time for us right now. You know, we have a very tight timeline in terms of getting ready for the convention. So we're sort of full speed ahead right now in terms of getting things going in order to have the best convention that we can have and then, you know, continue looking forward towards November.
Amanda, Toby here. So, like, in the news this past week, if you came on here and you thought, you know, we'd powder puff you, you know, like you should expect better from two bald grunts, especially like crusty senior NCOs. But in the past week, you know, there's been a lot of talk about guys like Petraeus and McChrystal coming out and, you know, really kind of engaging and trying to say that their voice is the veteran voice. Like, you know, let's talk about gun control. Like, hey, I'm like the highest of the high when it came to like slaying the dragon. Therefore, like all people should follow suit with me. And it's getting like the Special Forces Association have rebuked them. A lot of other veteran groups, you know, have kind of come out like against, you know, their message, if you will. How do you feel about like that kind of friction with the veteran community in terms of this political, or do you think political climate, or do you think it was political grandstanding in terms of like, say, like future positioning?
Well, obviously there's views, like different perspectives across the entire spectrum of the veteran community. There's over 22 million veterans in America today, so everybody's going to have, you know, varying opinions, especially when it comes to politics. But I think that we've seen the veteran support rally behind Mr. Trump, and you know, he's come out and talks about the problems with the VA and talks about rebuilding our military to ensure that we have the strongest, most elite force in the world and ensure that they're taken care of when they come home and make all of the sacrifices that they do in terms of their service. And so I think we've seen a great showing of veteran support behind the presumptive Republican nominee. And in terms of Petraeus, I don't know the specifics of that, but you know, he did work under the Obama administration as the director of the CIA. So,
well, yeah, he also got hung out to dry by that same administration, and McChrystal got fired by that administration. So I found it like super curious, you know. Of course, you know, this isn't a conspiracy thing, you know, like we're actually infantry guys that are smarter than that. But, you know, it's really interesting that, you know, these two very polarizing voices, Petraeus didn't get like, everyone knew that he was a Democrat in this first place. But I mean, that's almost like General Mattis coming out and saying like, hey guys, you need to soften up your speech. And you guys need to really consider, because I'm the voice of like all things Hua or Ura in his case. Now, it's real interesting, and you know the Trump machine is phenomenal, and it just seems to like with what we would think stereotypically a veteran would fall in line with in terms of like thought process. You would think that it would be better received, and it is. I'm not saying it's not well received. I just found it real interesting, like such high level, you know, guys came out, and I was wondering, you know, on your side, like kind of what that chatter was, but, you know, obviously it wasn't much of a blip since you didn't really know that much about it.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Petraeus served his country. He's a great American and he sacrificed a lot for this country. And so I think he's probably just, you know, just starting to get back into the political spotlight. A little bit, depending, obviously we've seen what side that he's moving towards, but in terms of his service, we all know what he contributed to this country. In terms of politics, I'm not really going to talk anymore about that.
No, it makes sense. I mean, people do, people, you know, when people start jockeying for positions, they start lining up with who they think is going to be there, so I'm sure that had a little bit to do behind it, but yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I want to kind of get back on this team that you're on as a press secretary. I guess, you know, is looking back, I mean, of course, I'm sure you loved your service as a helicopter pilot, but was you ever thought, like when you were trying to get your commission and pick your branch, was there ever an interest? Did you have a journalism background? Did you want to be a PAO or anything like that? It kind of what brought you to this, or just kind of a new turn in life?
So this was a new turn after I got out of the Army in 2010 and went to grad school, and I basically wrote for 2 years and got very comfortable in writing and getting into that field in terms of analysis and commentary and public affairs and relations and then eventually media. So, no, it was not anything that I thought out in the very beginning in terms of me leaving the military or even my time in the military. But I do have to say that I'm very happy with how things turned out. I absolutely love what I'm doing. It's a great way to continue service and use some of the skills that I've learned throughout my military experience towards, you know, making this country great again, and in terms of preserving everything that I fought for while I was in the Army.
Awesome. Yeah, that's something. So as I'm assuming in your role in this, in your team, it's just going to get, it's just going to get busier and busier every day towards November, isn't it? I mean, is that kind of, or not even November, but I guess towards the convention. And then after the convention, how does it go? What happens to you guys after that?
Well, absolutely. It's going to be very busy times between now and the start of the convention, which it starts July 18th. So we're really, like I had mentioned before, it's go time for us. There's not much downtime at all. We have lots going on in terms of ensuring that everything is ready for the convention, and we're very excited about it. And everyone on the team is working incredibly hard, and we're looking forward to putting on an excellent convention.
Okay, and then for you, is it on to really working on the book release and just
absolutely
diving into that 110%? Yeah.
So my book is released on September 6th. So I'll have some time to prepare for that. And like we chatted about before, there'll be some a big media push to ensure that the word gets out, that the book is out there, and go from there. Do some book signings.
Okay. Have you seen, you know, you said you got like four or five or six folks on your team that are all military. From the GOP side, do you see a trend that they look for? Do you think being former military is an advantage for some? Is those that are looking to get involved in a political process? Do you think groups like the GOP or even, you know, or the RNC or anything like that, are they look for that kind of those traits and characteristics that the three of us all know come with military service?
Well, look, I think that veterans provide they're an asset to whatever field that they go into when they get out of the military, whether that be politics, going back to the hometown, working in a family business, owning businesses. I just think that veterans have so much to offer their communities. They really are assets. They have years of leadership experience, have provided selfless service to this country. They know what it means to be a part of the greater good. And I think that any sort of career path that's willing to open their positions to veterans because they realize just what assets and what experience and leadership and qualities they can bring to making whatever field you're working in better, I think the organization's going to be better off for it. You guys are both military backgrounds. There's something about the work ethic that comes with working with veterans, and I think that it shows, and I think a lot of employers appreciate that.
Awesome. Well, that is that's cool. It's good to hear that, and I'm glad to hear, because, you know, we've seen a trend in the last, probably starting around 2010, a lot of employers who acted like they were very gung-ho because of the number of frequency deployments, at least for reserve components, they started to shy away from those in National Guard and reserves because they were losing employees. So it's good to see some people are, still seeing the value in that. But go ahead.
If you have a second, do you mind if I tell you who else is on the team with their military experience?
No, go ahead. Absolutely. I don't. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I think it's great because obviously we're all contributing to the team, but our comms director is his name's John Elliott. He's the one who he's the former Marine, but he served in addition to his time in the military. He's been a senior policy advisor for two different veteran GOP senators. He's been a communications director before on different Senate campaigns. He went to Harvard. He's a former intel officer during his time in the Marines. So we're so excited to have him on board. And then our deputy communications director for surrogates, his name's John Wagner. And he was on the PAO side, the public affairs side. So he was a former military spokesman, but he served in CENTCOM and NORTHCOM. He was in Baghdad during Operation Iraqi Freedom and has worked with a bunch of different technology firms, has a Bronze Star, and now he's on board with us. And Ryan Price, he's our director of caucus operations, and he was in 1st Ranger Battalion. And he is a longtime campaign operative. He worked on the 2012 Republican National Convention in Tampa, and then he also worked on the 2008 convention in Minnesota. And then our last veteran is David Urban. He's the deputy director of caucus operations. And he was with me, not with me at the same time, but he's a veteran of the 101st Airborne Division like I was. And he was in the first Gulf War and went to West Point. So I think you will agree with me that we've got a great group of people with a lot of experience, lots of different military backgrounds, and it's a great team.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, after having served 22 years myself, I wherever companies I've worked at, I always enjoy finding the other military folks there. We just I'm working with one right now. He's a colonel in reserves, and you know, we can talk military time. We can use slang and shorthand, and we both talk our own language and understand each other fine. The others just get lost on the side, but we are clear to the point. Bottom line up front. There's not a whole bunch of BS. It's a nice, effective way to work together for sure. So I'm sure it's good.
It definitely is. It's a connection. It's you know, brotherhood, sisterhood that we will all have been a part of. So it's great to connect with those people who have been there, done that, so to speak.
Right. So where can people find you at and find out information on the book? When can they pre-order? Can you give us some of that? Give our listeners some of that.
Yeah, absolutely. My book's available for pre-order right now. You can just Google Amber Smith, Danger Close, and the whole list of things will come up. Or it's on my website, which is officialambersmith.com, on Twitter. It's at Amber Smith USA. Those are probably the best ways to get a hold of me.
Okay. All right.
So
awesome.
It'll be available for pre-order now. It'll ship out on the release date, which is September 6th. And then I'll be touring around and speaking in different areas. I don't have a schedule for that yet, but more to come.
Well, I know I'll be looking for you to pop up on Fox again. I'm sure you'll try to, your agents try to get you booked on there for sure. And all that good stuff. But awesome. Well, I don't know if Toby has anything else. I know he does, but he can pipe in. I do want to thank you for coming on tonight, giving us some of your Tuesday evening, and letting our listeners know not only about yourself and your book, but you know, kind of what's going on in your team and what's going on with the convention and all that. That's just good info. Really appreciate it.
Great. Well, thank you so much for having me. We'll talk again.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a good night, Amber.
You too.
And bye-bye. All right, everybody. There you go. Ms. Amber Smith. Danger. Oh, I got the feedback. A lot of feedback. But, all right. Well, there we go, everybody. Hope you learned something. Check it out. Danger Close, my epic journey as a combat helicopter pilot in Iraq and Afghanistan. Look for it on Amazon and other places that books are sold. You can pre-order now. So, Toby. We started the show. You talked a little bit about your trip to New Hampshire. Before we get into that, let's just kind of give our listeners a little bit. Last week we were together hanging out, the Stu and the Nun, down in the great state of Texas, the Republic of Texas, hanging out with a good friend, past guest, and Mr. Tim Kennedy, past guest host and guest, Doug Mullen from Gears for Grunts, all kind of stuff going on. Give our listeners a little bit of a summary of what happened last week, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, you know, it was a good show. It's everything that you think it should be coming from the minds of some sick, twisted infantrymen. It was a great demonstration of, you know, the veteran community being able to empower itself and do something and be beholden to no one. I mean, that's really the big takeaway. I got to tell you, like, Nick Pomenzano, you know, everyone out of this movie is, like, hailing, you know, Vincent Vargas. You know, everyone's, like, schlobbing on Matt Best, JT. But really, like, all I saw was the brilliance of Nick Pomenzano. Like, I don't know how, like, you could oversee it. You know, here's a guy that, you know, took, you know, an idea, brought it to fruition through hard work, diligence, market research, understanding his demographic, understanding the marketplace, disrupting it, you know, cracking the code, leveraging, you know, relationships. I mean, that guy's brilliance and business savvy is unparalleled. And, you know, what an honor it is to know him and, like, try and, like, steal ideas from him. And I don't mean, like, steal ideas like jackasses do all the time by, like, calling their companies basically Ranger Up, you know, and, you know, like, you know, taking their shirts and, like, printing them themselves and saying it's theirs. No, like, just absolute brilliance, business savvy, and the success of the movie, you know, coming in, beating Wednesday, Thursday night, beating Captain America, you know, being in one of the top 10 movies of the weekend. And when you think about that, like, it went up against Finding Dory, which, like, smashed box office records, something like $167 million opening weekend. That's, like, crazy money, right? That's, like, stupid money. And here's, like, a movie that was made for under $3 million, like, hanging with, you know, the top 10 nationwide. You got Captain America. You got Finding Dory. I mean, like, just absolute brilliance. It was also great, you know, to, like, go to a private showing. Like, you know, friends and family of, you know, the sheepdog, you know, the old TK himself. And seeing him, like, be able to share something, some of his hard work, you know, he did some assistant directing on the film. He did some of the fight consulting, you know, working with Greg Jackson and Keith Jardine and some of the other, like legit Hollywood stunt guys. Watching him, like, fight Randy Couture naked, that was pretty solid. But really, like, getting to see him and the element of being able to demonstrate who he is as a person in terms of what he does and of giving back. You know, there was 20-plus people, Wounded Warriors and their family, that watched that movie free of charge and had, like, amazing seats at his generosity. So, I mean, it's just really cool. And then we went out and shared fajitas. They were delicious.
Shared some shrimp on the steak. Yeah, it was good. No, it was good. We got some behind-the-scenes info from Tim. The guy really took some pain to stay in character and stay dressed, and what little he did. But no, it was a phenomenal movie, and you know, I want to also call out, just like I did in my review, my critically acclaimed award-winning review of the movie. You got to give big shouts to Jack Mandeville, who I think really carried it. I mean, his acting, his comedy. I mean, he really was, you know, short of the face. You know, it's one thing if you stick someone in front of the camera all the time and all their products, that's that, you know, they're going to be in front, they're going to look like the main, but Jack really carried almost every scene he was in. People look for his stupidity and his comedic acting, and it really made a big difference. And I gave him big rave reviews in my review because I thought he really was the unsung hero in it.
No, like, Jack was, you know, when you said he carried it, I mean, he did more than carry it. I mean, he carried a blow up doll the entire movie.
True, he did.
But only Jack could do that. Like, I remember sitting there going, like, if it was not Jack playing this role, who could pull this off? You know, and there's a couple roles in that film where you could be like, swap out this guy for that guy, and it really wouldn't have affected the movie in any capacity. You know, you could have swapped out a couple of those guys, and it wouldn't have affected the movie in any capacity. Jack is one of those guys. You could not have done that. Like, his comedic brilliance really shone through. And I think, he's you know, brilliant anyway. He's been on the show, like, I don't know, like how many times we had Jack on here? 5 times. And, you know, what a treasure.
If you want to know, the acting skill, if you meet any of those guys outside the movie, they're pretty much like they are in the movie. Jack isn't. I mean, Jack's really sharp. He's a funny guy, but he's a pretty clean cut, straight. I mean, he's a pretty straight shooter. He's not like what he is in the movie. I mean, that was real acting.
No, like he can be the clown out in public too, but he put work in, and when you play yourself, it's one thing, you know, but like he actually took on a character. He took on a persona that was outside of his realm and really brought it. The guys that a lot of people are saying like were like super awesome. Yeah, I don't know if I think that they were super awesome, but it was a great movie. I had a great time, and I was like super impressed to see the efforts and the diligence, from not having distribution plan to like getting that movie on 350 screens across America, selling them out. You know, like that's no small feat. Like that's not a studio. That's not big, but that's people wanting to make it happen and making it happen. And setting the stage for that is like what I was speaking about with Nick, you know, like that's just absolute brilliance. And I'm super impressed and proud of those guys. And it couldn't happen to, you know, two better companies. So like, we're about to wrap up. I already kind of ranted in the beginning a little bit. Little disappointed. I really am looking forward to some other veteran voices speaking out right now about what's going on. I really wish, you know, people would speak their hearts versus grandstanding. And I look forward to that happening. And I think we're starting to see it. And I think we're at the crest of the wave. We're at the cusp of, you know, that moment that inertia takes place and the veteran voice just starts getting loud and proud and out of control. It's coming. And I think, sadly, we're at a tipping point in society. And I really hope that when it comes crashing down, when it hits that beach, it softens the blow, because I'm fearful for how things are going.
Yeah, and I think it's funny you mention that. That's what I heard about. Can you mute your mic? That's not good. There we go. Thank you. Yeah, I think that was kind of behind our guest Scott Kesterson the other day. We had last week. I think it was. This whole thing behind Kilroy Rising. That's a really veteran-filled super PAC, and I think that's the whole point behind that is to give. To have a place, a collector for veterans to come together who, you know, can't really have an opinion on politics and this and that while you're serving for the most part, but absolutely can once you've gotten out and have earned your right to have an opinion. So, it's one thing to have an opinion because you were born within our borders. It's something else to have an opinion when you have had selfless service for our country, whether it's in the military, law enforcement, it doesn't matter what it was. So, I think that's kind of what the purpose is behind that. So, yeah, it was, we'll have to see what happens, but you're right. You know, Kelly, he's another one. His wife was shot. It was terrible. All that stuff. He's been on a few times, you know, of course he's part of that same group. He's talking like he's the voice of the veteran. And every time he does, I make sure I counter that and put out there that he's not the voice for me. None of them are. I don't need a general or a colonel or a sergeant major or anybody to be my voice anymore. I have a pink ID card that says indefinite, and I am a longtime retired first sergeant. I have no shortage of opinion, and I'm not shy about sharing it. So, with that said, I think we're ready to go. We're going to play our outro. I want to wish everyone a good night. Thank you for joining us here on Stu and the Nun. And be sure and join us next week. We have a great guest, Miss Wendy Stewart. And we look forward to talking to y'all then next Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, here on Stu and the Nun Radio. Everybody have a good night.
Thank you for tuning in to Stu and the Nun tonight. We're always grateful for our listeners, both live and those who check us out on the archive. Be sure to check out our website at www.stuandthenun.com and like our page, Stu and the Nun, on Facebook, and follow Stu and the Nun on Twitter. Thank you for tuning in to Stu and the Nun tonight. We're always grateful for our listeners.
I don't know what's happened.